Amos is known as one of the minor prophets. And minor, I'm sure you must realise, means quantity rather than quality. In just 9 chapters, unlike Genesis 50, he sums up much of the message of the Old Testament, focusing on how the people of Israel are, or more likely are, failing to live out the allegiance to the God of Israel, Yahweh. The allegiance they profess, but they fail to reflect in the form of society that's grown up. And as in our day, it wasn't difficult to find someone saying politics and religion don't mix. So in our Old Testament reading, we've got an account of a row between Amaziah the priest and Amos the prophet. And you know what rows are like? They can escalate fairly easily. We've just seen the ultimate escalation, I suppose, in America with somebody opposing Trump, I presume, with a gun rather than with argument. But that be that as it may, certainly it didn't take much in those days, probably less than it does now, for things to turn violent and aggressive. Between the prophet and the priest, both working within the worshipping community, the priest would have to have arranged the services and so forth and the sacrifices. The prophet more concerned with teaching, more concerned with what he said than what was going on in the ritual in which he took part. The priests, of course, were part of society, and mixed naturally with kings and generals and governors and authorities of one sort or another. Now, sometimes the prophet did that, and sometimes quite the opposite. Prophets could stand apart from the establishment, speaking out against all those respectable people, speaking out even against the priest who was part of the same religious establishment, speaking out even against the king. And that was what was happening with Amos. And the reaction, I suppose, was predictable. Go prophesy in Judah, not here in the king's sanctuary. We can cope with prophets as long as they behave themselves, but you haven't, so go. Find somewhere else to do it. And I guess that sums up Israel at the time. It was the king's sanctuary, not God's sanctuary. That's a problem that at this distance of time we recognise. Most people didn't then. And Amaziah goes a little bit further. He tells Amos to go and prophesy in Judah and eat bread there. What a very ordinary comment. Many, many translations, in fact, have turned it into earn your living there. But Amaziah says there are good reasons, economic reasons, for you to go. You won't get paid here. You might in Judah, so try your luck there. I'm in control of the money. Perhaps the modern version is shut up or I'll sue. Well, it certainly happens, doesn't it? People telling the truth and getting into trouble for it. The similarities don't end there. Well, I guess we'd like to think of our vicar as being both priest and prophet. Good at organising the things we come to and enjoy, but also foremost at proclaiming the good news, or when necessary, correcting people. Not, of course, that we acknowledge that we need much correction, but everybody else, yes, that's part of the job, isn't it? Keep the show on the road and listen at the same time to the possible disruption that the Spirit may call for. I'm sure James will do a better job of that than I ever did. But that's not the point. It's not easy balancing those two calls. What happens if you feel that what God calls for could alienate the congregation? Or even put your job in jeopardy? Not easy. And I guess we sometimes talk about this place as James's church. Certainly those outside may think in those terms. And I expect some of you talk about this being my church. Now, neither of those is wrong. But let's try and understand that what's meant is that James and you and I belong to God's church here, rather than this church here belonging to us. Quite an easy distinction, really. But how often do we slip over into thinking this is our place, rather than the place of God who comes so often to challenge us? God's gift to you and me isn't to own a church, but to be owned by God. And therefore to receive from him, in Paul's words, redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses, and an inheritance that we might live for the praise of God's glory. Not the acclaim or the riches of this world, but our place in the kingdom of heaven, which first needs us to be forgiven. Well, we encounter another prophet in the disgusting gospel story. I think that's the right word, disgusting. We've heard it so often, of course, that we begin to get used to the idea that somebody can be beheaded on a whim. Wouldn't happen in our day, of course, would it? Yes. Like Amos, John believed that he was called by God to stand against the king. Well, the king in name only, actually, but still a person with sufficient authority to have him shoved away into prison. Herod with the authority that derived not from the gift of God, but the gift of the Roman emperor, who, of course, would always favour the rich. And those who love the exercise of power. John stood up to him, believing that he was called to do that, as well as, or possibly even as part of, preparing the way of the Messiah. And he paid the price, first with his freedom and then with his life. So what of us? Of course, we marvel that someone can face such suffering and defy authority like that. It's not our calling, but we acknowledge the greatness of John the Baptist, as did Jesus. Very striking words of his from another time. Among those born of women, no one has arisen greater than John the Baptist. Yet, the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. Yes, you heard that right. You are greater than John the Baptist. Let that sink in for a moment or two. Each one of us is called to listen directly to God through the gift of the Holy Spirit. For some, a few probably, that will involve the role of the prophet, disrupting the comfortable life we find it all so easy to live. Not for everyone, I hope. And I trust that none of us will be called to imprisonment and death by the king's fiat. That wouldn't do at all, would it? But let us be clear about whose we are. First and foremost, we don't belong to the society we live in. Nor first do we belong to our families, nor our peer groups, nor even our partners. We belong to God. You are God's. He owns you. Not what we deserve, but it's what God gives. To quote Paul again, according to the riches of his grace that he lavished upon us. Let's revel in that grace, that undeserved favour of God given to us.